The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Welcome to the closing market report. It's June the 6th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. A bit later in the program, the statisticians from the five top corn-growing states in the nation, in order, Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Indiana, will join us to take a look at crop conditions in their regions. And we'll hear from the Farm Bureau, at least a commentary from the Farm Bureau, on the omnivore's dilemma. Well, don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Did you miss the Closing Market Report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM 580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, willag.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM 580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to commodity week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to willag.org and put the AM 580 agricultural podcasts to work for you.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
Taking a look at the numbers in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. Futures finished the way this way in the July wheat at 7 cents higher for 527 and a quarter settlement price. September at 543 and a quarter. They were up 7 and three quarters. In December, wheat futures managed an 8 cent gain at 554 and a half. July corn, 380 and a quarter. The settlement price down 3 and a half. September's 2 and a half lower at 385 and three quarters. In December, corn futures at 382 and three quarters were down a quarter. From the soy complex, a 12 and a half cent gain. $8.28 and a quarter, the settlement price. August futures at $8.35 and three quarters, up 12 and three quarters. And November soybeans 13 cents higher at $8.59 and a quarter. July bean meal futures at $223.60, up $3.20. July bean oil up 52 at $36.27. From the Mercantile Exchange, August contract at $110.87 and a half, down 15. June live cattle down a dime at $91.02 and a half, and the August contract 100 weight at 91.02 and a half. They were up 35 cents for the day. June lean hogs 10 cents higher at $74.65. From the outside markets, nearby crude oil trading the July contract now down 62 cents at $65.59 a barrel, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,575 is off just about 102 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Wayne Nelson out of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, the story is kind of unique in Chicago today. A pretty good gain in the bean pit, some losses in the corn, but that was not all the story that was written, because if we took a look at the highs and lows, it was pretty volatile in that pit.
The corn pit was quite an active place there today, Todd. You know, we come in yesterday afternoon after the close. Of course, we got the crop ratings, the best for the first week in June for combined for corn and beans in the last 10 years. Just we got a little more rain overnight in some of the eastern belt here that was a little bit unexpected, and whatever like that. And we expected sort of an easier evening, and then Malaysian palm oil took off, went on up and pulled the beans, and in the last couple hours, well, I just pulled the corn and the beans on up and had a tremendous overnight trade, which bled into this morning. But the corn seemed to be bought by funds and small commission houses, and then the locals wanted to take profits towards the end of the day, and then that run into some stops as some of the commission houses had bought through the day and pulled them down towards the end of the day, but somewhat light volume on the close that they did pull those things down.
This is indicative of the move we've seen over the last several months, away from talking about ethanol and more to talking about biodiesel. And that, in terms of soybeans, not really directly related to the bean, although biodiesel can certainly be produced from soybeans. The vegetable oil primarily used is from palm oil. And the speculation is spilling over from those pits elsewhere around the globe into the trade in Chicago.
Yeah, of course, we were up over 100 ringgits last night for an all-time high in the Malaysian palm oil. And here today, 52 higher in the July and 51 higher in the Dease bean oil. And that, of course, you know, helping really support the bean market as we went along today. You know, that along with the talk of that persist about potential heat and dryness building later this month in the eastern belt and the drought in the southeast, and the idea is that Indonesia might hike its export tax on palm oil, and India is going to cut its import duty for the third time this year, and that the palm oil stocks will probably drop in the next report too. So all those things helping bounce up the bean oil or the palm oil, which is in turn pouncing up the bean oil, Todd.
All in all, I suppose it means that farmers themselves or need to find somebody to help them keep track of what's happening in all those markets around the globe, because it's not just their corn or their soybeans or even anymore just the South American crops, along with that, or the Chinese corn crop that they have to keep track of. And another little tidbit has been added to the whole equation.
I think that we start trading longer hours and trading more things to come into the equation, and you know, it's getting more difficult every day to try to figure out what they are thinking. But basically, the funds are looking at this, looking at the energy angle, looking at the palm oil angle, and are building a longer position here. Their commodity of choice right now seems to be the bean oil.
Speaking of longer hours, and I'll ask you just sort of flatly here, I know that we've talked about the extra trade in the grains at the Chicago Board of Trade, but the Mercantile Exchange now on a weekly basis is open every hour of the day except for from 4 to 5 o'clock, I think,
yes.
On Monday through Friday. They don't have weekend trade. What do you make of that, and what do you think of it?
Well, it's awfully hard for some of our small offices to compete with, you know, the majors like the ADMs, the Cargills, and like that just have enough staff that they can staff a 24-hour office. We sort of like the idea of, you know, not having it open all that time, but it's what's here and it's what we have to cope with, and that's why we have cell phones and are available basically 24 hours a day, no matter where we're at. Your local broker is on call.
And any final word of the day after a pretty good-sized trade day in Chicago?
Well, I think that basically the sell-off was somewhat small. Don't get too depressed about the corn. The beans are still leading the way. And the wheat, let's remember, you know, that's the Ukraine. It's some poor yields because of frost. And the wheat market does continue to look strong, Todd.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon. At the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by meteorologist Don Day to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own Mike Sola for the station forecast tonight across the two-state region calls for clear to partly cloudy skies. Lows, he says, will be from 45 in northeastern Indiana to around 60 in the far south. Tomorrow, says Mike, in western Illinois, partly sunny, a chance of some showers, a few thunderstorms, mainly during the afternoon. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny. Highs tomorrow will range from 75 in northeastern Indiana to 88 in the far southern parts of Illinois. The extended forecast for the two-state region, temperatures will spike into the 90s in southern and central sections on Thursday. That'll be followed by a rather strong weather system that could bring strong to severe thunderstorms to the area Thursday night and Friday. Computer forecast have modified the ridge of heat building over the next 2 weeks. It will be warmer, but not hot enough to completely shut off the chances for rain, and that should provide favorable conditions for crop development in most areas over the next 2 weeks.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL AM 580. In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus discusses the good and bad of the omnivore's good choices.
The New York Times proclaimed The Omnivore's Dilemma, A Natural History of Four Meals by Michael Pollan, not only the best of American food writing, but one of the top 10 books of 2006. With that buildup, it was disappointing to find the book laced with half-truths, exaggerations, and faulty logic. Pollan thinks the country has a national eating disorder brought about by anxiety and confusion over what to eat. But his intention seems to be to make the disorder worse by attacking the entire food industry, even organic farms that may have grown too big. His preference seems to be buying locally grown organic food, and there is certainly nothing wrong with that. Local food is supposed to be a new trend, but farmers markets, U-Pick farms, and other manifestations of it have been around for decades. The Dust Jacket says this book is groundbreaking. This is true in the sense that it has found a villain in the food system besides the supermarkets and fast food chains. The demon is corn. Perhaps we should have known. Corn is found in so many food products that it must be a part of some conspiracy to numb our palates and expand our girth. But corn is just a plant. There have to be people behind this conspiracy. So blame it on Earl Butz. Funnily enough, Butz has become a cult figure to Pollan and others who want to rewrite the history of the nation's food system. Butz was Secretary of Agriculture for Presidents Nixon and Ford in the 1970s. Inflation was high at the time, and labor unions and consumer groups were blaming food prices. Butz stood up for agriculture and was fond of using a loaf of bread as a prop to explain how much of the cost went for processing, transportation, and retailing. Somehow, Butz is now being blamed for wanting to drive up crop production and drive down the cost of corn and soybeans to benefit an industrial agriculture empire. Pollan and other writers like him should take a step back and consider that Americans are living longer, healthier lives, and the food system in America is always evolving and getting better, not worse. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own, and they reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just call us at 217-333-0850.
This is Les Schulte, WILL's Director of Corporate Support. If you own or manage an agribusiness, you can help in supporting this valuable service on AM 580. To find out more information, give us a call at 217-333-0850.
Time now for our weekly look at the Crop Progress Report. Statisticians from Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Indiana, those are the five top corn-producing states in the nation, will join us in just a moment to tell us what's been happening in their regions. But first, a look at the numbers from USDA as they were released yesterday afternoon. Winter wheat now said to have 88% of that crop headed on the five-year average, just a bit ahead. 85% is the rolling number. Harvested at 1%. That's behind the five-year average of 4%. And 88% of the soybeans have been put in the ground. The five-year average, 81%. Last year, 88% of the bean crop had been planted. 70% of that crop has emerged. The rolling five-year average at 56%. Last year, 66% of the beans were up at this time. Taking a look at the numbers from the corn, 94% of that crop is up and growing. The rolling five-year average at 88%, and last year, 93%. Take a look at the numbers for conditions now of those crops as we view corn. It's considered 60% in good condition, 18% in excellent condition. That across the 18 states and the same as last week. Last year's average was 56% at this time in the good condition and 15% in the excellent category.
Kisaki, State Director from USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending June 3, 2007. Continued rain is making it difficult to finish planting soybeans and harvest the first crop of hay. Some fields are showing signs of stress from excessive moisture with yellow corn and shallow root systems. Wind and rain are keeping sprayers out of the fields. Fields that have not been sprayed are developing weed problems. Grain movement has picked up as planting nears completion. Statewide precipitation was 1.75 inches, while normal for the week was 1.20 inches. Temperatures for the week as a whole averaged from 0.9 degrees cooler than normal at Omaha Council Bluffs to 5.3 degrees above normal at the Quad Cities. For the state as a whole, temperatures averaged 2.7 degrees above normal. There were 2.6 days suitable for field work compared to 5.9 days last year at this time. Topsoil moisture rated 2%, very short or short, 63% adequate, and 35% surplus across Iowa. Subsoil moisture rated 2%, very short or short, 65% adequate, and 33% surplus. Oats headed are at 11%. The condition of the oat crop is 2% very poor or poor, 20% fair, and 78% good or excellent. 93% of the corn crop has emerged. An estimated 5% of the corn has been or will be replanted. Corn condition across Iowa is 4% very poor or poor, 17% fair, and 79% good or excellent. Soybean planted are at 93%, behind last year's 98% and the five-year average of 94%. 73% of the soybeans have emerged. Soybean condition is 4% very poor or poor, 21% fair, and 76% good or excellent. 15% of the first cutting of alfalfa hay has been completed. Last year at this time, 62% had been harvested, and the five-year average is 37%. All hay condition is 11% very poor or poor, 29% fair, and 60% good or excellent. Pasture condition rated 4% very poor or poor, 23% fair, 73% good or excellent. This has been Joe Prasaki with USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Fields Office, with the weekly crop weather report for the week ending June 3rd, 2007.
This is Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Illinois Field Office, reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending June 3rd. Rain showers blanketed the state once again last week, keeping topsoil adequately moist in all but the East Crop Reporting District. This precipitation, accompanied with temperatures averaging nearly 5 degrees above normal, have created near-ideal growing conditions. Statewide, topsoil moisture was rated 5% very short, 24% short, 68% adequate, and 3% surplus. There were 5.1 days suitable for field work. Corn emergence has reached 99%, which compares to 96% 1 year ago and 90% for the five-year average. Corn height averaged 16 inches, compared with 10 inches last year and for the five-year average. Overall, the state's corn crop was rated in mostly good to excellent condition. Soybean planting advanced to 96% complete, compared to 89% 1 year ago and 81% for the five-year average. 85% of the soybean fields have emerged, compared to 68% 1 year ago and 59% for the five-year average. The soft red winter wheat crop continues toward maturity, with 88% of the wheat heads filled. This compares with 89% filled last year and 79% normally. 64% of the crop is turning yellow, compared to 58% 1 year ago and 41% for the five-year average. Statewide, the wheat crop was rated in mostly fair to good condition. In other crops around the state, sorghum planting was at 78% complete, well ahead of last year's 58% and the five-year average of 51%. The first cutting of alfalfa was 72% complete, while the second cutting was just getting underway at 4%. Red clover cutting had reached 72%, and the oat crop had 16% of the heads filled. This has been Brad Schwab with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Steve Parn reporting Nebraska's weekly crop weather report for the week ending June 3, 2007. Wet weather continued to slow soybean and sorghum planting. Corn conditions rated 83% good or excellent, well above last year's 67% rating. Corn emerge was 95%, near last year's 96 and the 93 average. Soybean conditions rated 81% good or excellent, well above last year's 64% condition. Soybeans planted was at 86% complete, behind last year's 97 and the 92 average. Soybeans emerge was 57%, behind last year's 76 and 65 average. Wheat conditions rated 57% good or excellent, well above last year's condition of 21%. Alfalfa conditions rated 57% good or excellent, well above last year's 46%. Oat conditions rated 71% good or excellent, well above last year's 42%. Pasture and range conditions rated 65% good or excellent, well above last year's 35%. This has been Steve Parn of the USDA's NAST Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAST Minnesota Field Office, reporting the crop weather summary for the weekend June 3, 2007. Minnesota's crops continue to develop at a normal pace this past week, just ahead of the five-year average progress. Above normal temperatures and mostly adequate soil moisture supplies aided crop development, with exceptions of a few pockets of heavy rain, which left standing water. Herbicide applications were underway where weather and field conditions permitted. In general, crop conditions across the state improved slightly from the previous week. The average temperature for the week was 64.8 degrees. 3.3 degrees above normal. Statewide, topsoil moisture supplies as of Friday were rated 1% very short, 12% short, 76% adequate, and 11% surplus. As of Sunday, June 3rd, the average corn height was estimated at 8 inches, compared to the 5-year average of 3 inches. Soybeans were 87% emerged, compared to 56% for the average. Spring wheat acreage was 23% jointed, compared to 11% for the average. Sweet corn was 78% planted, compared to 64% for the average. Dry beans were 90% planted, compared to 73% for the average. 87% of the field corn was rated in good or excellent condition, and 77% of the soybeans were rated in good to excellent condition. Pasture conditions improved slightly, with 69% rated in good or excellent condition. That's the weekly crop weather for the week ending June 3, 2007. I'm Doug Hartwig with USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the crop weather report for the week ending June 3rd. Rains over the weekend were widely scattered and much less than some farmers had hoped for. The precipitation provided some relief, but was too little in too many areas to reduce concerns for seeds still in the ground and the recently emerged plants. Topsoil moisture was rated 15% very short, 41% short, 43% adequate, and 1% surplus. Subsoil moisture was rated 7% very short, 30% short, 62% adequate, and 1% surplus. Precipitation for Indiana ranged from 0 to 1.53 inches for the week. Temperatures averaged from a high of 93 to a low of 49 degrees. For the week ending Friday, 6.4 days were rated as suitable for field work. 97% of the planted corn acreage has emerged, compared with 79% last year and 78% for the five-year average. The condition of the corn crop was rated as 71% good to excellent, compared to 52% last year near this time. 96% of the intended soybean acreage has been planted, compared to 71% for last year and 74% for the five-year average. By area of the state, 98% of the soybeans have been planted in the north, 99% in the central region, and 90% in southern Indiana. 83% of the planted soybean acreage has emerged, compared with 47% last year at this time, and 54% for the five-year average. 96% of the winter wheat acreage is headed, compared with 98% last year and 95% for the five-year average. Winter wheat condition is rated as 36% good to excellent, compared to 77% last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office.
About 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Don Day about the weather. The regional newscast is next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A judge has thrown out two lawsuits hoping to restore Chief Illiniwek as the University of Illinois symbol. One suit was filed by the last two U of I students to portray the chief. They had claimed their rights to free expression were violated when the Board of Trustees discontinued the chief last February. The U of I says it had no choice but to avoid NCAA sanctions. Judge Michael Jones also dismissed a similar suit from Champaign attorney John Goodell. Their decisions can both be appealed. Goodell says he's leaning toward challenging the judge's ruling, while an attorney for the two former chiefs says they've made no decision. Chicago Mayor Richard Daley says it's embarrassing that Democratic lawmakers and Governor Blagojevich can't agree on a budget. But Daley says if a spending plan can be agreed upon in Springfield, then everyone would forget about the embarrassment. Democratic lawmakers missed last week's deadline to pass the budget. Now it'll take Republican votes to get one passed. Daley renewed his call today for lawmakers to find money for education and public transportation. State environmental regulators have given a permit to the nation's first large-scale clean-burning coal plant. If it gains additional approval, the plant near Taylorville would produce power for 600,000 households using 1.8 million tons of Illinois coal, which would be burned through a cleaner technology called coal gasification. But the builder of the plant wants the state to require Ameren and ComEd to buy at least 5% of its power from clean coal sources, like their plant. A company that wants to build a natural gas pipeline through central Illinois and Indiana says they should have federal approval for the project by February. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is asking for more details on the environmental impact of the project by Rockies Express. On this Hunger Awareness Day, the head of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank says cash donations are more helpful to his agency than food donations. Jim Hyers says his staff can turn each donated dollar into several dollars more in food products that it can store and forward to pantries in 14 counties. Hyers says the food bank has seen donations trail off a bit, particularly from large wholesalers, while more people are lining up for food. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
And I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Information Advantage, WILL, right here in Urbana. We're joined now to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather by Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Tell me a little bit about what you see around the globe, please.
Well, first of all, here in North America, we're going to see a pretty favorable pattern for the Midwest and Corn Belt. Temperatures are going to be near normal, and we've got some precipitation on the way. Now, there's going to be some areas that could use a little bit of moisture, especially the Dakotas, Minnesota, portions of northwest Iowa, and eastern Nebraska. They're going to see a pretty significant storm roll on in the next couple of days. Temperatures are going to be going well below normal across some of the northern plains states and Rockies, but there's going to be some good rain producing rain, thunderstorm, shower pattern all across the upper Midwest, and some of this will get into the Corn Belt later this week towards the weekend.
And how heavy will that rainfall be?
We've got some areas in the upper Midwest, talking about Minnesota, North Dakota, that could see 1 to 2 inch rains or more.
And high temperatures in what range?
Well, they'll see high temperatures as cool as just the 60s, maybe as cold as the 50s in North Dakota as we get into Thursday and Friday. It's quite a storm coming off the West Coast, much cooler than normal temperatures, although no worries for any freezing temperatures.
Check in on China and the corn crop there, please.
Well, they're looking at a pattern not unlike what we're seeing here in the U.S. Frequent periods of shower and thunderstorm activity. Chances are going to be highest, though, in the central and southern and eastern areas. Some of the northern and north-central areas of China are going to be a little bit drier.
And there's some concern about the Ukrainian wheat crop?
Well, they are going to be experiencing much, much below normal temperatures all across the Ukraine and across most of northern and central Russia. In fact, there are two pockets of cold air, one on that side of the globe and the other one here coming into western Canada, the northern, north-central United States. Temperatures there are going to be cold enough that there could be some crop damages. It's unseasonably cold in those areas.
What's the abnormality that's causing the cold air pockets to drift south?
The way the jet stream has configured itself here late this spring, quite honestly, you look at weather maps, it looks more like a pattern that we'd see in late April or early May. One factor, this is just a little bit of speculation, maybe the fact that those water temperatures across some of the ocean basins cooled off a little bit since where they were over the winter, and that's maintained the jet stream and kept it a little bit stronger, kept the cold air up a little bit longer than normal.
Anything else we need to check in on before I let you go?
It's going to be interesting, typical weather this time of year. Do watch out for severe weather here in the Midwest later on this week.
We appreciate it much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what Don has to say again, you can certainly do that. Just visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all or most of our daily broadcasts for agriculture, including the opening and pre-opening market reports, along with the closing market report and Commodity Week. And if you'd like, you can listen to what Sue Martin has to say at the noon hour as well. It's all there as MP3 files. A good portion of those are put up as a direct-to-your-computer download podcast. You can sign up on the website not only for the podcast, but for our weekend newsletter. Please visit willag.org. I'm sure that you will find it worth your time. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.